ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसादपुराय श्रीमद्भक्तिवरान्तस्वामिनिति नमने नमस्ते सरस्वतदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारणे निर्विशेषन्यवारि पाश्चातरेशतरणे श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर श्रीविष्णुगौरवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे श्रीमद्भागवतम कैनन चैप्टर 2 वर्स 21 अतः तेषां भविष्यन्ति मनांसि विशदानि वाय वासुदेवंग रागाति पुण्या गणानि वा स्पृशां औरा जनपदानां वाय अतेषु अखिला दास्युषु अथ तेषां भविष्यन्ति मनांसि विशदानि वाय वासुदेवाङ्गरागाति पुण्यगन्धानि स्पृशाम् पौरजनपदानं वै हाक्तशाक्यदास्युषु अथ देन् तेषाम् आफ् देम् भविष्यन्ति विल् बिकम् मनांसि द मैण्ड्स् विशदानि क्लियर् वै Indeed, Vasudeva, of Lord Vasudev, Anga, of the body, Raga, from cosmetic decorations, Atipunya, most sacred, Gandha, having fragrance, Anila, by the wind, Sprasham, those who have been touched, Paura, of the city dwellers, Janapadana, the residents of the smaller towns and villages, Vai, indeed, Hateshu, when they have been killed, Akila, all, Dasyushu, rascal kings. Translation, after all the impostor kings have been killed, the residents of the cities and towns will feel the breeze carrying the most sacred fragrance of the sandalwood paste and other decorations of Lord Vasudev, and their minds will thereby become transcendentally pure. For a part, nothing can surpass the sublime spirits to be dramatically rescued by a great hero who happens to be the Supreme Lord. The death of the demons at the end of Kali Yuga is accompanied by fragrant spiritual breezes, and thus that atmosphere becomes most enchanting. Text 22. When Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears in their hearts in its transcendental form of goodness, the remaining citizens will abundantly repopulate the earth. When the Supreme Lord has appeared on earth as Kalki, the maintainer of religion, Satyuga will begin, and human society will bring forth progeny in the mode of goodness. When the moon, the sun, and Brihaspati are together in the constellation Karkata, and all three enter simultaneously into the lunar mansion Pusha, at that exact moment the age Satya, or Krita, will begin. Thus, I have described all the kings, past, present, and future, belong to the dynasties of the sun and the moon. Translation, after all the impostor kings have been killed, the residents of the cities and towns will feel the breeze as carrying the most sacred fragrance of the sandalwood paste and other decorations to the Lord Vasudeva, and our minds will thereby become transcendentally pure. When Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears in their hearts in his transcendental form of goodness, the reigning citizens will abundantly repopulate the earth. When the Supreme Lord has appeared on earth as Kalki, the maintainer of religion, Satyuga will begin, and human society will bring forth progeny in the mode of goodness. When the moon, the sun, and Brihaspati are together in the constellation Karkata, and all three simultaneously enter into the lunar mansion Pusha, at that exact moment, the age of Satya, or Krita, will begin. Thus I have described all the kings, past, present, and future, who belong to the dynasties of the sun and the moon. So this is actually the conclusion of the Bhagavatam, Canto 12. And if we examine the Bhagavatam, we'll see that throughout the Bhagavatam, the genealogy of kings has been traced. This is also one of the 10 topics of a Mahapurana in the second canto, and again in the 11th canto, the topics are described as 10. And one of the topics is Manvantara, or the succession of Manus and the kings following them. We'll find that when Canto 10 starts, after all the 9 cantos and the 10th canto starts, we'll find that gradually through those cantos, the kings from Swayambhuva Manu in the beginning, recounted in Canto 3 and 4 and whatever, beginning with him, the genealogies are described. So Swayambhuva is there, and then following in his line we have Uttanapada and Dhruva, etc. And then, of course, after 71 yuga cycles expire, that line more or less ends. And then another line begins with another Manvantara. Sometimes they're related as brothers or whatever. And then he starts a line and happens. So, eventually we get to Vaivasvata Manvantara, which is our present one. And Satyavrata begins that line of kings. And then the ninth canto discusses the lineage descending from that up until we get Krishna appearing. And then tenth canto describes Krishna. And then after that we'll find here a description of the future kings in Kali Yuga. We'll see that gradually there's a decline in the dynasties and different things happen, and eventually when Kali Yuga begins, the dynasties disappear more or less. And then later it's described in this chapter how at the end, after this happens and Kalki appears at the end of Kali Yuga, again the last descendants appear. They've been hiding in the Himalayas and again they will appear, and they start the dynasties again, and another Satyayuga starts. So, Manu is one thing, Manu and his descendants is one thing, and then the other is the progression of yuga cycles within the Manvantara. So there's 71 yuga cycles, so there's 71 Kali Yugas within one Manu's reign. So the dynasties there have to deal with this frequent occurrence of a Kali Yuga where the dynasties get destroyed, and then again, someone comes and restores the dynasties and the kings begin reigning again. So this is describing the present, or the future, let's say, the Kali Yuga of the present and the future state at the end of this Kali Yuga, where Kalki will finally appear at the end, and then after him Satyayuga appears. So as we know, Kali Yuga means the disintegration of Dharma. And that was actually described in the first canto of Bhagavatam, where we see that the description was given of Parikshit, who was the last great king, we could say. And this is when Kali Yuga began, or more or less the borderline time. And description of Kali Yuga is in terms of one quarter Dharma remaining. One leg of the bull of Dharma is there, so one quarter Dharma is left, and that gradually disintegrates also. So, therefore, Kali Yuga gradually, as it progresses, the adharma becomes more. And those symptoms were described in the previous verses. So, then at the very end, we have the appearance of Kalki, who is an avatar of the Supreme Lord. So there's some description here, his lineage, his parentage, whatever, his birthplace, and his activities. In this way, we get a very good description of who Kalki actually is. And therefore, people cannot concoct or claim another avatar is Kalki. Just as, of course, it's common in India that people make claims of being avatars, so they even have a Kalki avatar at the moment. He's claiming to be Kalki, even as a horse. But he hasn't destroyed anybody yet. So, this description here gives a definite time period, a definite place, definite parents, etc., and definite activities of Kalki. So, Kalki must correspond to this. Further in the Lago Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami describes a little bit about Kalki, and he concludes that ultimately Kalki is, because it is said in the Bhagavatam itself and other places that the Lord is Triyuga. He does not appear in Kali Yuga. So what about Kalki? He's the Lord. How can he appear in Kali Yuga? So the answer is that in Kali Yuga, generally, the avatars that appear are Shaktivesh avatars, jivas, not Supreme Lord. So this gets around the idea that, confirms the idea that the Lord appears in three yugas. So in other yugas, he appears in his full forms, even as yuga avatars. But in Kali Yuga, everything is Shaktivesh avatar, Buddha, the Kali Yuga avatar, who propagates Kirtan, and Kalki. They are Shaktivesh avatars. So this fulfills more or less the prediction that the Lord does not appear in Kali Yuga. He appears as Shaktivesh avatar instead. So that is Rupa Goswami's conclusion. He also says that some people say that Kalki, like Buddha, will appear in every Kali Yuga. So that means 1,000 times in the day of Brahma, Kalki will appear at the end of every Kali Yuga and then restores it like that. Now, he doesn't say whether he agrees with that opinion or not. But anyway, we know that in this particular period there's a Kalki at the end of this yuga cycle. And we also know the exact length of this yuga cycle, over 400,000 years, and only at the end we'll get the appearance of Kalki. So now we're only at the beginning of Kali Yuga, 5,000 years or so into the beginning. So we have a long time to wait before Kalki will appear. So he cannot appear at the present time. So in this way we have a avatar of the Lord to arrange for the reinstatement of Satyayuga. So it was described how adharma took place, and then Kalki comes and he kills all the demons and whatever. And then in this particular verse, he revives the people, the remaining people who have not been killed, by his presence. So here it says that the sandalwood, the fragrance of the sandalwood paste and other decorations purifies everybody, and they become stimulated by that fragrance. Of course, also by his presence and his appearance and whatever. But even by his fragrance, he's able to purify everybody. So, therefore, the population that remains after the demons have been killed become very, very pure. And they are qualified to begin the next stage, that is Satyayuga again. So in this way, the Lord counteracts the influence of material energy. The nature of energy is to gradually decline. So the Lord produces a certain good state, like sattva, and gradually declines into tamas. And then what's going to happen? If it goes to tamagun, then everything becomes very inert and slow and dark. So therefore the Lord restores it again in a sattvic condition, gradually dwindles down to Then he restarts it again. Then it goes down into tamas again. Huh? So, in this way, the Lord helps maintain the material world by, again, introducing a sattva quality again and again and again. But the nature of the nature of material energy is to go towards tamas. Just as in the beginning of primary creation or sarga, when Mahavishnu glances, he glances and Prakriti turns into Mahatattva. And Mahatattva is in a state of very pure sattva. But then gradually it starts to decline into rajasic state called sutra, and then into tamasic state called ahankara. And then ahankara transforms into mind and senses and five gross elements and sense objects, and they combine together and make universes. So that sattva gradually declines into a tamasic state. So this is quite common in the material world that this will take place. And we see it in the revolution of the cycles of time from sattva to kali, and then sattva to kali, and sattva goes over and over again. So the Lord is there to help restore that sattva again, and then it goes back to tamas again. So Kali Yuga is a tamasic state, and even Kali Yuga, as it progresses, becomes more tamasic. And when it reaches a limit, a final limit of lowness, then the Lord appears as Kalki, and then he restores the order again. And Satya Yuga begins. So one of the purposes of the Purana is to show how the Lord enters into the material world and protects the living entities. So he does that individually as avatars like Kalki, and he does that through his agents. The devatas are there to supply everything to the living entities, and the manus and their descendants are there to maintain dharma so the entities can prosper. So the Lord makes arrangements for the jivas in the material world, in spite of the fact that the material world is not a very good place to live in. So he makes some arrangement by which they can survive nicely. Yeah. So prosperity in the world is equated with institution of dharma. Unfortunately, the nature of the material world is anti-dharma. So the tamas takes over eventually and dharma declines. So therefore the Lord has his means of restoring dharma again. So one of them is of course Kalki or some other avatars, and the other is restoration of the kings like Manu again. So in this way the Lord maintains dharma in the material world, and therefore the living entities can survive and prosper and progress spiritually. So the avatars appear in a scheduled way, not haphazardly, and this schedule is more or less fixed every day of Brahma. So we'll have the same pattern appearing in each day of Brahma. So that is regulated. Of course, there are always variations. For instance, generally, as I said, the Kali Yuga avatar is a jiva, Shaktivesh jiva, the avatars. But we find in our particular Kali Yuga, the Yuga avatar is not a jiva, it's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he is also hidden, he is Channa avatar. He hides his position as Supreme Lord. But generally, the Shaktivesh avatars only appear in the Kali Yugas. It is also said that the Yuga avatars, they're considered not so powerful as the other avatars like Kurma or Matsya or Hayagriva or Varaha, etc. They're considered Vamana. They're quite powerful. So the Yuga avatars are considered to have less Shakti. They display less Shakti. Of course, they appear, 1,000 times in a day of Brahma. They manifest less powers, even when they're Supreme Lord in the other Yugas. And it's also said, Rupa Goswami mentions, that they are expansions from the Manvantara avatar. So when Manu reigns, distinct from Manu, there's an avatar that also resides or presides over that Manvantara period along with Manu and assists him. For instance, our present avatar is Vamanadeva. So he lives for the whole of Vaivasvata Manvantara period along with Vaivasvata Manu at the same time. And from him then the expansions of the Yuga avatars take place. So they are expansions of expansions, more or less. And they display less powers than the other avatars. So the function of the Yuga avatars is mainly to propagate Dharma. So such Yuga Dharma is meditation, Treta Yuga Dharma is Homa, sacrifices, and Dwarpa Yuga Dharma is Paracharya, deity worship, and Kali Yuga Dharma is Kirtan, Nam Kirtan. So the particular avatars for these different yugas propagate those particular dharmas. That's their main function. So they don't do other activities like lifting up the earth or whatever like that. They don't show great powers. They show limited powers to propagate dharma in the material world. So here at the we have the conclusion of the Bhagavatam with the future parts of this particular Kali Yuga. But we should not think that that's the, you know, the end of everything. Satya Yuga starts, and there are 71 cycles in Vaivasvata Manvantara. We're only in the 28th cycle. So we've got a lot of cycles to go before the end of this one. And then there's seven more Manvantara periods in the day of Brahma. So again and again and again, we'll have all these cycles of time appearing and Yuga avatars appearing, etc. So the periods of time are quite vast, and the appearance of the avatars also takes place periodically over these long periods of time. So there's quite a gap between the avatars, at least one Yuga each for the Yuga avatars, and then of course we have the other Leela avatars. So therefore the avatars do not appear all the time. They appear periodically. So when they are not there, therefore the Lord appoints others to help out. So one is the kings, the descendants from Manu. They are there to help with the protection of Dharma. At the present time, as I said, as Kali Yuga progresses, that line disappears and there's no more descendants of Manu. They're there, but they're hiding in the Himalayas. And only when Satya Yuga comes, then they're restored. So therefore, it is rather difficult to implement Dharma in Kali Yuga because there's no king. So we often talk about Varnashram system, but actually we can't establish it because there's no king. The king is instrumental in establishing that Dharma, and he will only appear in Satya Yuga. So we can make some efforts to do something like Varnashram, but we can't really have a complete Varnashram because there is no king. And we can't produce a king because those kings are already set up by the Lord. Descendants of Manu are there to do that job, empowered by the Lord. So the Manus themselves and their descendants are also called, they're not Chakravesh avatars, but they're specially empowered by the Lord. They're called Vibhutis of the Lord. Just as in chapter 10 of the Bhagavad Gita, we have Vibhutis of the Lord, different things. The Lord says, I am the bird's eye, Garuda, etc. So, among Pandavas, I am Arjuna. So the Lord has special empowered living entities who are not on the level of Shaktivesh avatars who have eternal bodies. But nevertheless, they're getting special powers by the Lord. So the Devatas are there with special powers and the Manus and the sons and grandsons, etc. of Manu. They have special powers bestowed by the mercy of the Lord. So they have Shakti of the Lord to institute Dharma in the material world. So they don't have to struggle to do that. Their nature is that they have this power. And so this is an arrangement of the Supreme Lord for the protection of the living entities. So of course some people ask why the Lord doesn't always appear, why doesn't he protect everybody, why is the world such a miserable place, etc. So the Lord makes arrangements in this way. And whenever miseries and problems we see in the material world, we can't blame that on the Supreme Lord. One is, of course, the nature of material energy to follow its course and create destruction. So everybody must die in the material world. Things must get destroyed. Everything is temporary. It's the nature of matter. As long as we have this material world, we have to accept that fact. The other is that a lot of this is regulated. Of course, one is regulation according to time itself, where Kali Yuga must decline according to the time cycle. The other is the karmas of the individuals. According to their karmas, then they also have to suffer at certain times. So that also is not produced by the Lord. It is the production of the Jivas themselves. They're responsible for their suffering because they produce activities that create karma. So that also is it can be corrected by the Jivas themselves by correcting their activities. So the laws of Dharma are there to help the Jiva get out of these difficult situations. If they follow the Dharma, then they can actually escape from the major miseries of the material world. And when it becomes completely hopeless due to time itself, then the Lord intervenes as Kalki, for instance, and he restores the whole system up to a sattvic state. And then the kings come back and they maintain that system. So this is an arrangement of the material world by the Lord. One, for protection of the living entities, and to also show them that ultimately the material world is not a very nice place to live in. Because it's constant struggle, and it's going to be constant destruction, whatever. But the Lord helps out in the material world, so that the living entities get the best use of a bad bargain. Okay, any question?
You mentioned in Kali Yuga generally the avatar, Ashaktivesh avatar.
Yeah.
Does that include Lord Buddha also? Because
yeah.
Sometimes you hear it said that he's Vishnu Tattva.
Well, according to Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita, his conclusion is the avatars in Kali Yuga should be Shaktivesh only. In general, you know, because of that. He also says that some people claim that Buddha appears in, like Kalki, they appear in every Yuga, every Kali Yuga, 1,000 times in the day of Brahma. He doesn't say that he agrees with that, but it looks as if he considers Shaktivesh. Now, I looked on the internet and has some of the kind of ISKCON-ish sites, and they have all sorts of Shaktivesh avatars there, including Muhammad and Christ and whatever, but they're not accepted as far as Rupa Goswami is concerned, because Shaktivesh avatars have eternal spiritual bodies in the spiritual world. It's not that anyone can become a Shaktivesh avatar. They're fixed, and they appear at certain times in the day of Brahma. So there's Narada and Kumaras and Prithu and Parsaram. Those are the main ones. And then, of course, we have Buddha and Kalki and the Kali Yuga avatar, Yuga avatar. And Ananta Shesha, who holds up the Bhumandala, is also a Shaktivesh avatar, who's different from the Ananta, who is the bed on which Vishnu lies, like Mahavishnu has his Ananta Shesha. That's different. That's Supreme Lord, expansion of Balaram.
Where does the idea come from that Buddha might be a Vishnu?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea. In one place, I think also, I think Vishnu Chakravarti kind of puts Rishabhadeva in a Shaktivesh avatar category, but in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, he's not. He's more or less classed as a full avatar. And Vyasadeva also, not a Shaktivesh. Now, there is the stories in, like in Vishnu Purana, there's a list of sages who become Vyasadeva. Because a whole long list of all the Kali Yugas, and when, just before Kali Yuga, this sage will become Veda Vyasa. And in Mahabharata also it says a certain sage became Vyasa. So Rupa Goswami explains that sometimes the Jivas who are qualified enter into the avatar and participate in his pastimes. So that's how he explains that.
And last night you described that, like a lot of Ramachandra and Shyamala, they don't show the full, obviously, like Krishna, like that. So sometimes the Buddhists describe that they can't show that, and some say they don't show that. So what's our actual understanding? Because they are Krishna.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we can say that they all have the powers, but they don't manifest them due to that particular form, because it would be incompatible with that form. For instance, Narasimha Dev having Madhurya Rasa or something is a little incompatible.
And then how do we understand the Matara avatars? Because sometimes they're also described as being like a Kshatriya base, like a jiva who is in power.
Which one?
In general, the Manvantara avatar. Or
the Manvantara avatar.
Yeah, because there's a particular class of avatars we've got, the Manvantara avatar.
Yeah.
So sometimes they're always described there like a Kshatriya base.
No, the Manvantaras are full. Yeah. But they're distinct from the Manus. Like Swayambhuva Manu is a Manu. And the avatar of that period is Yagya. Yeah? And Vaivasvata is the son of Vivasvan, is the present Manu, and the avatar is Vamana. So those avatars are full. But the Manus are vibhutis. They're not even Shaktivesh forms, they're vibhutis. They're jivas with material bodies, but they have special powers given by the Lord.
So would that be
Well, less, because they have material bodies, where Shaktivesh avatars have spiritual bodies and are eternally in the spiritual world. So the Manus are posts, like the Devatas. So that's a little different from... But they're given powers by the Lord. It's like Brahma also is not a Shaktivesh avatar. He's got a material body, but he's given special powers by the Lord. So he's a Guna avatar. But it's something like the Vibhutis, more power. Yeah, some of them are considered, like Yagya is considered a Leela avatar, but he's also, and Ajita are considered Leela avatars, but they're also Manvantara avatars. Vamana also, and they're also Manvantara avatars. Yeah.
So how can we consider, is he a Shaktivesh avatar?
No, he's special, exception. He's the Yuga avatar, but he's not a Shaktivesh, but he covers himself. So he doesn't appear as God, and he acts like a human being. So he's called Channa avatar, covered avatar. So he's an exception to the rule. Supreme Lord, not a Shaktivesh avatar, but he acts as a human being, as a devotee of the Lord.
So he's not made of Yuga
avatar? He is a Yuga avatar, but a special one. Yeah, so I'm saying special is a special case. I said in general.
Maharaj, as you said, the Shaktivesh avatars, they have spiritual bodies and they eternally reside in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
So there's a Buddha loka or something to that effect.
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, maybe not a loka, but they're actually there, like Narada is there. I don't know if he has his own loka, but Narada is there in the spiritual world, so Buddha's there, Kumaras are there, and they have pastimes with the Supreme Lord, whatever. Rupa Goswami, like there's what Prabhava and Vaibhava forms of the Lord, gradually more manifestation of powers. Usually the Prabhava forms are like sages and things like that, like Dattatreya and Rishabha, etc. And then we have the more powerful forms like Matsya and Kurma, and all these Hayagriva, etc. And then he puts Narasimhadev, Rama, and Krishna as Paravasta forms, even more powerful, and Purna forms. And of those, then Krishna is Swami Bhagavan.
In the verse today, we understand that at the end of Kali Yuga, people are as degraded as you can get.
In general?
Yeah, but it seems like from the verse today, some of those Kali Yuga people.
Yeah. So he kills the bad ones who are like the predominating parts and very evil, but the people who remain, somebody's got to remain. So there's a remain of not the demons. And those are the ones he infuses with sattva, and they become the progenitors in Satyayuga and start Satyayuga.
And it mentions that in Satyayuga there's only one varna, that's Samsara.
Yeah.
So how the kings play their role in that?
how they.
There's only one varna.
Yeah.
So how can there be king?
Oh well, that's a general rule, obviously, that you know, one varna. So if we have one varna that's brahminical, then how can I have a king? Because he would be a kshatriya or whatever. So that's like generally the people are of higher quality and they don't distinguish between varnas, so they all generally do the same thing. But they still have a leader. So he acts as king. But let's say he's very sattvic. And they do meditation. It's a yuga dharma, so obviously everyone's very elevated there. So even the king is highly elevated.
Kshatriyas
appear
only in the two ways you mentioned just now.
What's that?
Kshatriyas only.
What, the kings, the manus, the who, yeah.
What about the Treta Yuga, that Lord Ramchandra has appeared, and the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has appeared as king? So, is it only a Kshatriya that kings are provided or?
No, the lines of the, like Manu's line continues. Through those different ages, and then finally it gets destroyed in Kali Yuga. So the sons and the sons and the sons and the sons, or whatever, of those lines from Manu continue to reign through those different periods.
And they are not classed as kings.
Yeah, they're all kings. So the system of Dharma is maintained until Kali Yuga starts, and then it disintegrates, and therefore the line of kings stops. Why yugas is because this is an arrangement to allow sattva to rule for some time. As I said, the nature of Prakriti is to gradually sink down into a tamasic state. So then periodically we get a restoration with sattva, and then gradually it begins to sink down again. The nature of material energy is ultimately tamasic, yeah? So the Lord has to do something to allow the sattva to appear. So he supports sattva by having satya yuga and then letting it decline like that. So we can say the rotation of cycles is there to allow jivas, at least for a major part of the time, to participate in dharma. So therefore we have Kali Yuga is the shortest yuga and other ones are longer. So therefore there's big periods when dharma is maintained and then a little short period when no dharma is there. That's Kali Yuga. So at the same time, as I said, he wants to show that the nature of the material world inherently is not good. It's destructive in tamasic. So therefore that's a reminder. The tamasic nature, gradually he allows it to show up, and then again he restores dharma to help living entities, and again, he shows a dharma how it appears, must appear eventually in Kali Yuga. So the arrangement of the jivas is that obviously those who are born in different yugas, the other yugas, have better karmas. And those in Kali Yuga are the ones with worse karmas because they suffer more and they have no dharma. One born with a dharma is obviously the person who has bad karmas. So the people in Kali Yuga, therefore, are the ones who have done sinful activity or whatever, don't have any dharma left.
Would there be a time where there would be no need for the material world, as in no jiva would want to come here, would all want to stay in the spiritual world, or is it perpetually that the material world would always exist?
Well, there's infinite number of jivas, bound up jivas. There's infinite jivas sitting in Mahavishnu, so there's always jivas to come into the material world. No matter how many get liberated from the material world, there's always some to appear in the material world. So it is said the Prakriti is eternal. There's no beginning and no end. So there'll always be a material world being created, another material world like that, created and destroyed, and there'll always be jivas to come into that material world. Question.
Maharaj just said that
Who? Maya
and? Maya and Kali.
Kali. Okay.
Could you please explain how do they relate to each other and how do they, like, what are their functions and how do they relate to Krishna?
Well, Maya is the broadest conception of matter. Not matter, but even above matter, we can say matter is part of Maya. Maya has two categories, the subtle aspect and the gross aspect. The gross aspect is matter, pradhan and prakriti and all the things like senses and mind. That's the gross aspect. Subtle aspect, things like karma and time. These are the subtle aspects of Maya. And it all has to do with operation of the material world. Matter. It's achit by nature. No, not conscious. And completely dependent on the Supreme Lord's will to manifest itself. And then, of course, Kali is simply an extension of that. One of the extensions. Of course, we can say even Satya, Treta, and Dwarpa are also extensions of Maya in one sense, because they're only aspects of time, and time is an aspect of Maya. But Kali is the worst aspect, the degraded aspect of material energy. That means when it becomes very tamasic, whereas satya is the sattvic aspect. It's also Maya. Sattva is also part of the gunas, which is part of Maya, but it is, let's say, comparatively better. So Kali Yuga is, let's say, a tamasic aspect of material energy.
On the same lines, this calamity in Japan, how do we explain on this? Is it the karma or how do we?
Yeah, well, one, of course, is Kali Yuga, and therefore, as Kali Yuga goes on, we get more irregularities and more destruction, etc. The other, in terms of karma, we can explain it according to Bhagavatam, like the first canto, where the earth is miserable because a dharma is attacked by Kali. So the bull is dharma. And when dharma is attacked, then the cow begins to grieve and cry. So the cow is the earth. So if there's no dharma, and then the earth also is miserable and doesn't give its produce and whatever. This is, the cow does not give milk when it's suffering. So when dharma is attacked, therefore, we'll expect earth not to cooperate with the jivas there. And we get more miseries and whatever.
As you're explaining that we can't really institutionalize by Ashram and Kali Yuga because we've got the king and so forth. So then now we understand why we saw the Sons of Thakur, if we're introducing Brahminical initiation.
Oh, why Lord Rashi did that? The only reason that Bhaktisiddhanta introduced Brahminical initiation, it's not actually Brahminical because it's simply that one becomes, twice born. By getting a thread, it could be Brahman, Kshatriya, or Vaishnava, that with the mantra. But the reason is to show that the Vaishnava has automatically got all the qualities of the other Varnas, including a Brahmana. Not to make them Brahmanas, but to show that the Vaishnavas are superior to Brahmanas. Because the challenge was there that a Gaudiya Vaishnava, who's not a Brahmana or even in the Varnas, or the upper Varnas, is not qualified to worship the deities. So then he says, no, the Vaishnava is superior. One who's got the Vaishnava mantras or the Krishna mantra, well, he is qualified to worship and he's superior to the Brahmana. So therefore, he gave the Krishna mantra. Because of that, he's qualified to get the Vedic mantra, Upanayana mantra, which and the thread, etc. also. So his qualification is the Vaishnava, not as a Brahmana. Brahmana is secondary to the Vaishnava. It is super inferior. So we're not actually becoming Brahmanas, we're becoming Vaishnavas, which includes Brahmana, Vaishya, Kshatriya, everything else in it. That's the reason.
Mm-hmm.
Um, I've not seen Jiva Goswami or Rupa Goswami or even Vishwanath Chakravarti quote the Bhavishya Purana at any time. I don't know which reason why, but they never quote that. They quoted other Puranas like Garuda Purana and Varaha and whatever, Matsya Purana and things like that. I've never seen them. Bhavisotra they quote, and then other ones, yeah. But I've never seen them quote that one. I don't know why. Now, modern scholars say it's highly interpolated, which means people suck things in there. So that's another problem with it. So, and even I don't know if there what's an authoritative edition of that Purana. I don't know. There's editions of it. That's but whether if you compare them all, whether they got the same material, I don't know. And I don't see any comparative study done to show which edition is the proper one. How will the golden age manifest? Or
as long as the golden age manifests, people at some point will stop their abusement to earth. So how will it start? Like, what will
Well, yeah, it describes in the Brahmavarta Purana. Anyway, one of the Puranas describes that after 5,000 years of Kali Yuga, then there will be some 10,000 years of good period where there'll be, you know, reading of Puranas and Sankirtan, etc. So within Kali Yuga itself, there's some good and bad periods. Nature's decline in general, but there'll be that 10,000 year period of, let's say, good activities. How it will manifest, it gives us a few details. One, of course, is that the people become more spiritual. They're chanting the names of the Supreme Lord. They're reading the scriptures and the Puranas more, etc. Doesn't go into more detail than that, however, but obviously they have to follow more dharma, so that means less sinful activities in general and less violence and whatever. Well, it's a different type of system because there's no separation of varnas. But at least dharma is there, and the king rules with dharma. So, what's the question?
I'm just wondering whether it's really impossible to banish a system. It seems like the examples that Prabhupada also said that I have finished off the
Yeah, so half, let's say, some aspects of Varnashram one could introduce, but we can't have a complete system of it because the king is not there. Who's going to be the king? We elect the king, or we we elect the king, and who's going to be the king? It doesn't work that way. It works by lineage, you know, of manus. So that part we can't put in there. And because that part's not there, a huge section of it is also not going to operate properly. So we can put some aspects of it there, but not the whole thing, you know, and not a complete system. I don't know. King? Maybe. But anyway, you know, a king, you have to destroy the democracy of the modern world and have a whole new political system or whatever, which people will be against at the present moment, I think.
The caste division is based on Gunaraka.
What's that?
People who have a Kshatriya as his
qualities. Yeah.
If
they have the qualities. Yeah.
So, does it mean like, but as for you, there are no kings in the Yuga. So, what about the qualities that Buddhas and Dharmas have got to have?
Yeah. Well, in other words, we can make kshatriyas or whatever, but that king, that special person who is the king, he is the descendant of Manu.
You mean like there must be kings who can rule the world?
Yeah, that one. So naturally, people do have different qualities according to the gunas, and they can somewhat follow the kshatriya codes, but still to institute a system with the king at the top ruling the world, that is difficult to do as long as we don't have the that line from Manu, empowered personality. He's also eternal. So some are eternally in Mahavishnu. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Yeah.